Welcome to the Sunbird Sports Show with Paul Metters. Brought to you by Fresno Pacific University on 790 ESPN.
All right, good evening. Thank you guys for listening. This is the Sunbird Sports Show, and you're listening to it on 790 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at the ESPN Fresno studio on Palm Avenue across from Bullard High School. If you're familiar with the show, this is show number 10. Our usual format is bringing on a head coach of a sport and usually 2 to 4 student athletes from the school. But tonight will be a little different, and I know you guys are really, really going to enjoy our conversation tonight. Well, the reason why is because when you think of Fresno Pacific University soccer, you think of one name and one name only. That is Jaime Ramirez. He is joining us today. He is currently the director of soccer at Fresno Pacific University. Just completed his 34th season at the school. Coached the men, the women. He graduated from the school in 1981. As a player, he scored 54 goals, had 27 assists, 134 points in total. That was a record that stood until 1999. I'm sure we'll talk about some of those good days at Fresno Pacific. Back then, it was the college. Now it's a university. When they added a women's program in 98, he was the program's first head coach. Also the head coach of the Fresno Fuego, the first coach from 2003 to 2007. He's in many Hall of Fames. I counted three, and there might be some more hidden in there. So we'll talk to Jaime about all his inductees into all the Hall of Fames that he's involved in. The field at Fresno Pacific University is aptly named Ramirez Field. We're going to have him on for the entire show, two segments. You'll also hear about his humble beginnings, his time at Clovis High, and of course, all the great stories from Fresno Pacific College and University. All right, I have a recap for you guys before we take a break and talk to Coach Ramirez. It was a quiet week for Fresno Pacific University athletics. And I got to say, we usually have Enzo and Pablo to come on to ask questions and help with this, but they are studying finals as all the other students are as well. So they're not able to join us today. We're going to miss them, but we'll have them on next week. The men's basketball program was in action over the weekend. They hosted UC Merced. However, the Bobcats got the best of the Sunbirds and won 71-51. Seth Brown led the way for Fresno Pacific with 15 points, and former guest Isaac Peralta, the team's leading scorer, chipped in with 11. And other news, we talked about this last week. There was Giving Tuesday at Fresno Pacific University. Coach CJ Haydock came on the show and talked about that wonderful event. Well, we're happy to report that thanks to many generous supporters, over $16,000 was donated to the Sunbird Athletics on Tuesday. So thank you guys for participating in that and for donating. Everyone at Fresno Pacific, thanks you for your tremendous support. We got some action this week. I might as well go over that. There's more Sunbirds hoops at the Special Event Center on Tuesday night. PacWest Conference play begins against Westmont College. The women tipping off at 5 p.m. and the men at 7:30. Then on Saturday, Biola University is in town with the women's game at 2 p.m., followed by the men at 4:30. If you can't make it down to campus for any of these games, they can all be heard live right here on 790 ESPN, featuring play-by-play commentary from the new voice of Sunbirds Hoops, KC24 and CBS 47 sports director Scott Bemis. So lots of good things happening at Fresno Pacific University. All right, after the break, we're going to hear from Jaime Ramirez, the Fresno Pacific University Director of Soccer. I can't wait for this interview. Really looking forward to it, and I know you guys will love it too. This is the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN.
Now, welcome back to the Sunbird Sports Show with Paul Metters on 790 ESPN.
All right, thank you guys for tuning in. This is the Sunbird Sports Show, and I am your host, Paul Metters. And in the intro, I mentioned that we have a very special guest for both segments today. We got Jaime Ramirez. He is the Fresno Pacific University Director of Soccer, a member of many Hall of Fames. I counted three. Perhaps there's more out there. He's a soccer legend in the area, both as a player and as a coach. Just completed his 34th year at the university. So, Jaime, first of all, man, this is a very big honor for me because You know, I know your family. I've known you for a while. I was a student when you were the head coach there for the men's program, and I know your relatives as well. So this is like coming full circle. Here we are talking on ESPN Radio. So thank you for joining me tonight.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me. It's an honor, really, and a great opportunity for me to get to know you a little bit better in your craft. You know, this is wonderful to see.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we're talking off air, and we're talking about all the connections we have and the good times at Fresno Pacific University. But last week was Thanksgiving, and I know you got some grandkids as well, so you're probably hanging out with the grandkids and your own kids for Thanksgiving. So how was Thanksgiving break for you and Thanksgiving dinner?
Thanksgiving was amazing. We didn't spend it with our grandkids. They were up in Washington visiting my son Orlando's wife's family up there. She has a sister that lives up there, and then they had a great time up there. You know, we miss them dearly, but we also had some gatherings. I have some players that they come and visit us for Thanksgiving every year. They've been doing it now for years and years and years. They're like family to us. So we have a gathering with them, and our youngest son, Gabriel, and our middle daughter, Julie, were here to visit with us as well. So we had a smaller, a little more quaint gathering, but it was still wonderful. Thanksgiving is a special time. And we have a Thursday morning soccer match with the Obwalds. Erin Obwald is part of my assistant coaching staff this year, but she is one of the founding members of the women's soccer program.
So you play a little soccer on Thursday mornings?
Thursday mornings, early in the morning. We play every year on Thanksgiving. We have a match organized by them, by the Obwalds from the Well Community Church. A bunch of members of the Well Community Church come out and play, and it's just an amazing experience.
And so, you put on the cleats, too?
I put on the boots.
Huh? You still got it?
I got a little bit. I got a couple of spooky jukes still left in me. So
don't underestimate the Ramirez family as well. All right, so great stuff. We're going to get into your childhood and coming to the United States and how you landed in Clovis. I mean, that's just a great story. Can't wait to hear all that. But you've had numerous titles at Fresno Pacific College and now university. Your current position is called Director of Soccer. So how has that transition been, and how is it different from being the head coach? Obviously, Cam Shiroki and Coach Hector Hernandez of the women's team. But how is the director of sport different from what you're used to, and how much are you enjoying the new spot?
Well, it has been a blessing for me to have a new administration sit with me last year in the middle of spring. And I'll give credit to Kyle Ferguson, our new AD. He was new last year. And with the transition of the women's coach and us taking over the women's program, my staff, it was just too few of us handling that situation with both programs. And even though I had done it already when I started the women's program in the early 2000s, the late 90s, I had more help back then. The staffs were a little more reduced, and so it was just me, my assistant coach, trying to handle both programs. And so my proposal to them was to hire two associate head coaches, have me guide them, direct them, mentor them, be on the pitch, and help them transition from wherever they came onto the Central Valley, Fresno Pacific University soccer. And it's worked out so well. So we had two fantastic hires, you know, Cameron Shiroki and Roberto Hernandez. And so again, for me, the credit goes to our administration, who is willing to listen, is willing to allow me to try this new format of director. As everyone that knows me knows, we're getting closer to retirement age as well. And so transitioning into this particular role has been good to allow two young, brilliant soccer minds to come in and give us an opportunity to get back into the track in terms of what we've experienced over the past few decades of success.
And so what are your daily operations look like? Are you helping out with practices? I know we're going to get to a mentorship question in just a second. I know you're huge on that. But what do your daily operations look like in regards to both programs?
Yeah, during the regular season, the associate head coaches came in running because they got hired in July, and then the season was just around the corner. And so we started training camp. We met a couple of times to go over what my philosophy of play is. You know, I mentioned to them some principles of play, you know. Pillars of Sports, those kinds of things. And then I also, one of the things that I wanted to make sure that they understood from me is what Fresno Pacific stands for, that we are about changing lives. We're about the eternal. Okay, sports is a vehicle, you know, and we want to focus on creating an environment and letting them be a part of this environment that I was going to mentor for them and model with my returning staff of a service that we can provide for our student athletes. And so we came running, and you know, it started off a little bit fast because it was such a high learning curve on their part. And even though the model seems to be new of associate head coaches, director, I ran both programs for a number of years when we first started with just one single staff. This particular model, I think, has a greater potential of success because now we have two separate staffs. And we showed it this year with the level of success that we experienced with the women and then with the men as well, in terms of results. More importantly for us, in terms of culture. For the women particularly, who everybody knows, and anyone knows anybody about soccer in the community and collegiate soccer knows that Fresno Pacific has gone through several transition in coaches on the women's program for the last few years. And our objective and our goal is to provide some stability and a faith-based experience that we are, that should be more significant and important in the lives of our student athletes than wins and losses. Those come. Those will happen because of the work that is being done. But speaking into the lives of the young ladies has been very, very important to me in what I've been able to see the last few years and how they've suffered. And so, good transition so far.
Absolutely. And both coaches with players have been on the show. They each had their own show, and I could see that. I mean, Cam Shiroki, you mentioned, both brilliant minds. Absolutely. So for a coach to go straight from high school, which Cam did, right, from Clovis North to college, is not easy. It's very rare. And you could see right off the bat with both of the coaches how well the players responded, right? They respected them. Both are men of faith as well. And you could see it with the players, right? Just the love of soccer, but also faith and school, all those things are intertwined with the student athletes, and you got two really good ones to lead the program.
Yes. And the way that that the season went on and how those roles of each of us manifested themselves in the life of the kids, and the way the kids respond in a very competitive environment and at times, you know, provides challenges for us in terms of mentoring, in terms of harnessing a little bit, you know, sure, that the egos, the competitive desire, the responses to certain things. I thought that there were wonderful opportunities throughout the year for our young coaches, you know, to see that at this level, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different on the men's side, particularly, and working with men at the NCAA Division II. The average age is mid-20s, low mid-20s. I would say 23, 24. Okay, it's a little bit different sometimes in a community college experience that some of these guys have. On the women's side, it's still a little bit more pure in terms of, you know, your 17 through 22, 23-year-olds. But to be able to manage those personalities, it was wonderful for me to see how they both learned how to manage temperaments and try to bring it together to believe that we have a Fresno Pacific or how we shape and mold lives.
And it is a challenge, right? Do you see a little bit of yourself in these coaches? Like, right, I mean, you started coaching at a very young age, right? Mm-hmm. But do you see like a lot of the information that you have learned over the years, you know, passed on to them? Do you see a lot of yourself in these two guys?
Absolutely. The energy and the passion, I see that so much. And sometimes, I let them run the sessions, and I'm in the middle of it. And if I need to correct something, I do. And, you know, try not to get too much in the way. But if I have something to say, I will say it. But I see their energy. I see their passion. And I see the way they project information to the kids, and I think that was me.
Yeah, that was. Did it take you a long time to get to a certain point? Right. Obviously, you're competitive, and that's why you've reached the level of soccer prowess that you have. But did it take you a while to like really get it, or you're probably still learning some few things, right? Picking up different things, but right, was that a long process for you?
It's been a long process and a long journey, because as those of them, individuals that know about small college experiences in athletics particularly, know that they're difficult tasks. They're not cushy jobs. They're not chill jobs, as some people would say. They require a lot of energy. They require a lot of time, a lot of patience, a lot of understanding. And they require the understanding that you're going to make mistakes, and you have to move on and continue to do it. I see the mistakes that I made 25, 30 years ago, in my first few years, you know, my second year, you know, I look back and I say, I did and said some things that I did eventually years later, I had to go back and apologize for some of the things that I said, the way I responded to things that weren't going my way as a coach in practice, even in game, by halftime conversations. There were some things that I would go home and I just said, I'm embarrassed I said that when I did that. And then I would have to go back and apologize, you know, pray about it and apologize. And because apologies by a coach, they don't come easy. Don't come easy for us to do that. And when you recognize that there's a bigger picture and a bigger purpose of why you're there, why you're helping the kids out. You know, it's not about just me winning games. I am competitive. I do compete to win. But that happens because of other factors than just yelling and screaming at kids for not doing the right thing. There are moments where you have to be stern, but there are times when it's better to bring them into the office and have an honest conversation.
And I'm sure you had a few of those.
Yes, we've had a few of those.
Come to Jesus so, moments, right?
Yes. As they say, and they've been good, by the way. They've been all very, very, very good. And so we've, I see that in the energy of these young coaches, both Roberto and Cam, and I applaud them, and I'm here to help them. And so,
and the men's team had a remarkable year, made it all the way to the PacWest Championship and lost that heartbreaker, right? 3-2, they were up 2-0. So, you know, that's something that they won't forget for a long time. It's something that's going to stay with them. Win or lose in a season like that is going to last. The memories are going to last a lifetime. And it's heartbreaking, right? At times when you advance that far and you're so close to winning a championship and celebrating with your guys and it's ripped from you. So many aspects to coaching, Jaime, you know, throughout every coach's career. Again, 34 years at the university. What are some really great moments that pop into your mind thinking about your overall career? Obviously, it's still going. You still got some memories to make, but what are some really good moments that pop into your mind?
Well, the moments for me are about people and with people. You know, having shared an experience in coaching, both as an assistant coach and as a head coach, immediately after I took over the program in '91, with my youngest brother Joel, who was a senior when I took over the program my first year, and to see him become a first team All-America, one of the top strikers in our region. In that time, the NAIA had a senior bowl, to be called into, selected into the senior bowl in Springfield, Illinois, for us to travel together and see him play in a match, and get to meet some of the best players in the NAIA, who by the way, were much older than him. Many of them, because some of those guys are 25, 26. Yeah. So that's a moment, to be able to start the women's soccer program and see my daughter, Julie, be a part of that when she graduated from high school in 2003. Obviously to see my son as well battle his own decisions between Westmont College, UCLA, you know, and us, you know, and Orlando chose to come to FPU and become a two-time first-team All-America, drafted in the, I'm going to say the 31st pick in the overall, you know, MLS, you know, super draft. There was an amazing experience because we were at the convention, National Soccer Coaches Convention, you know, that year, and I believe it was in Baltimore, if I'm not mistaken. And to be able to share those moments, those family moments, you know, and to really have the best associate head coach by my side in all these years, you know, and my wife, Laura Beth, who you know, it always willing to give a positive advice and honest advice when I'm even out of turn, you know, when I don't look at things, you know, the way I can be looking.
Wives
at
have a tendency to be able to have that skill, right?
Remarkable.
To bring us back, reel us back in, or give a different perspective. Sometimes, yeah. You know, we get so narrow-minded, yeah. Right? We just think one way, and you know, our wives come along, and you know, reshape some of our thoughts.
Well, the highlight for me is the fact that while I was an assistant coach, and Orlando was playing elementary school, my wife got her coaching certification before I did. And she did a fantastic job at the elementary school, Ainsworth Elementary School, where she helped you know, coach Orlando's team, and then she became basically my video person for many years, because nobody could videotape the way I wanted the videotaping to be done. So we were doing match analysis before everyone was doing match analysis. I wanted video,
like the camcorder, right?
In the camcorder, yes, exactly. And so her and I spent quite a bit of time going over, and exactly I wanted the zoom in, the fade, and she was brilliant. And a shout out to my wife, I know she's listening, Laura Beth, and a huge thanks for helping me become a better coach. Because if it wasn't for that, then I don't observe games the way I want to see them. And I don't become a better coach in the next practice, in the next practice, in the next practice, in game after game. I mean, it was years and years that she helped our program, gratis, by the way. That's a huge highlight for me, recognizing how valuable she has been to our program.
That's amazing. And then I love how we opened up the conversation. You talking about Thanksgiving, you weren't able to be with your entire family, but you have a routine. You got former players and people that you've impacted in your life come and share a meal with you. Jaime, we got another question before we hit the break here. I'm curious, you know, in your time coaching soccer at Fresno Pacific University, have kids changed? That's a conversation we have at the high school level as well, right? You know, we can get into things about, you know, technology and the way that the world works now. But I'm talking more like, do you think the heart of kids have changed, or has it stayed consistent throughout the year? And even trying to relate to them, what are some differences and what are some similarities?
Well, when you've gone through the decades of life in this world, and in a country like the U.S., it's so progressive and has the latest of the latest of the latest of everything. You know, I mean, we grew up in the TV era, right? And people thought that was evil.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of time we spent watching Saturday morning cartoons, but then we spent a lot of time outdoor playing, our generation. You know, then the next generation, you know, came in. You know, my son Orlando, for example. You know, and they had other things. You know, they had Game Boys and they had this and that. I still remember when Orlando, he asked me for a Game Boy. I said, I'll buy you a Game Boy if you juggle the ball 100 times. And at 9 years old, he did it and got his Game Boy. Okay, and so, however, there was still his love for the game, you know, and the willingness to do what needed to be done in order to become the person that he is now, right? And now we're looking at a different generation of kids that has other forms of distractions.
Sure. Yeah.
Or entertainment, or ways of doing things, and we have to adapt to those as coaches. We have to find ways to recognize that they're still kids, you know, they're still in those growth stages, developmental stages, you know, and whether science tells us something or the experts tell us something, psychologists, neurologists, etc., tell us, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that. When we get them on the pitch for 2 hours, and we do video analysis, and we do different kinds of team bonding activities, they're still kids. They're still kids that are going through the same things that we went through. They just have different modalities, if you want to say that, if it's okay to say that, to deal with. And it's up to us. It's up to us to think, okay, how are we going to adapt to help them get the most and the best out of themselves, right? And not continue to use these circumstances as excuses, because there's been excuses from day one. I mean, we can make excuses, right? But I think kids are kids, and people are people. And we have to do our job to invest in what we need to do to prepare ourselves to help them sort of get the best out of them in what we are doing. And in this case, yes, it's soccer. It's football. Okay? But we get them, and we get the whole package. They're wonderful human beings.
Excellent perspective, Jaime. Yep, programs change, venues change, professors change, coaches change, but I mean, the heart of kids, the heart of student athletes absolutely remains the same. Good word. All right, we're going to take a break, and we got to hear about you growing up, your time at Clovis High, even your time playing soccer yourself at Fresno Pacific College back in the day. So looking forward to a second segment. We got Jaime, more from Jaime Ramirez coming up on the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN.
And now, the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at the ESPN studios across from Bullard High School. Just had a really awesome and enlightening conversation with Jaime Ramirez, and we got him for another segment, actually all the way up to the end of the show. It's a very special presentation. Hope you guys enjoy his stories. Jaime, I teased in the other segment about growing up, going to Clovis High, but you had very, very humble beginnings. You were born in Mexicali, Mexico. Is that where you first fell in love with soccer? You discovered soccer? Was it a time where you just, you know, would go out in the street and play soccer with whoever you wanted to? So talk about your time growing up in Mexico before you moved to the United States.
Yes, I think one of the things that was a daily thing to do in Mexicali is just play street ball, barefooted. Our street was ample. We had a wide street where we could make a good size field when we get home from school.
All dirt, right?
All dirt. All dirt. Yeah. All dirt. And in the winter when it rained, it's all mud and puddles, and you know, we managed to get things done and play and be kids, right? But yeah, I mean, the love of the game, I think started for me seriously in terms of just totally falling in love with it. Playing was playing. I would play as a child. You know, I probably remember maybe back to 5-6 years old. I have some recollections, but didn't start really coming to a sense of memory of playing daily till my fourth grade year in elementary school, and that was the year of the 1966 World Cup, and watching TV and watching Pelé get kicked out of the tournament. And I was a big fan of Pelé at the time. Everybody was in the world, for that matter. Seeing the Charlton brothers for England. England happened to have won the World Cup, that year, black and white, clean TV. But then going outside and trying to practice all the moves and all that, and having the opportunity to play with some wonderful players who, some of them, you know, two of my brothers, my mother had two sets of twins, and rest in peace, my mother, we just buried her a couple of weeks ago. One of my brothers, Jose Luis, was a big influence in my life. I wanted to be like them. They were very good players, very good students, and playing street soccer and recess soccer was the thing to do. And they were two grade levels ahead of me, and so my interest was always to play with the older kids. So at some point during my fourth grade year, they gave me an opportunity, the upper graders. And, you know, I never looked back in wanting to play against all the kids and learning from them. And we used to have these neighborhood games where other neighbors would come to our block and play against us. And they would literally bring 50 to 75 people come and watch. And so that put a burning desire and interest in wanting to play for the love of the game, for what I was able to do. but also to have people come and watch you. And it was a lot of fun. So it made me think of the World Cup, right?
That was your little World Cup. That was our
yeah, because it was serious. People were serious about playing. From if we played the other block, we get a handful of people come. But if we played another neighborhood, and you were picked to be on the team, we were the heroes of the neighborhood, and so I got to do that as arguably probably the youngest at that time, because my brothers were all 11, 12, and you know, I was 9, 10, and the other kids that played were older as well, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, and I got to pick to play with those guys, and I got a few minutes, you know, playing, but when you got in there, it's like I just wanted to die to get the ball and please the older players, right? The older kids. It's just part of our nature, because that's what happens when we're youth, right? We want to be like our teenage brothers and sisters and all that. And so I just remember that fondly. It was significant in my life, and I think that carried over to when I came to the U.S.
You came to the U.S. at age 11 with your mom to Clovis to live with your grandparents?
Grandparents, yeah. My mom brought us over to work the fields one summer, that summer of 1968. And then with the idea, she had the idea that a number of us were going to stay and live with our grandparents. They had agreed to do that.
Did you know that at the time?
No. I didn't know it until the end of summer, when first they told us that we were going to go back. One of my brothers and one of my sisters were going to stay and go to school. We knew that. I didn't know it was going to be one to stay also until a couple of weeks after school started. It may have been after the first week, because we were waiting for someone to come pick us up, take us back. And I was hoping to go back, because I was playing soccer in Mexicali, and that was my goal. I was an all-star player. I was one of the top players in the city as an 11-year-old, and I wanted to go back. It wasn't to be, and so we stayed here, and my grandmother enrolled us at Temperance Cutner Elementary School 2 weeks after school started.
Knowing how much English?
Zero.
Zero.
I could say yes. No is pretty much universal.
Shake your head no.
I don't know. Okay, maybe. Okay, but to actually a sentence carrying a conversation. No, it was culture shock that first day of school.
And you remember? Are you?
I remember like the first day.
You remember your teachers and I'll never forget Mrs. Gilbert. You a certain way.
I'll never forget Mrs. Gilbert. If she's still alive, a big shout out to Mrs. Gilbert, because she was a wonderful woman. She took flashcards and taught me vocabulary words through an interpreter. Roy Vidari was a Mexican American boy in my class that knew Spanish, and he was my translator. And daily vocabulary lessons, and little by little, I picked up phrases here and there. They were helpful and allowed me to be able to communicate probably midway through my second year here, sixth grade.
And were you playing a lot of soccer at recess, or did some of the other kids, man, Jaime, come over here, be on our team, or what was that like?
Yeah, recess was about playing some of the typical sports, right? I didn't play four square. The tether ball was very yeah. popular. Yeah. But then when they had one of those rubber soccer balls that they used for PE, we went out to recess. I mean, I was a dribbling fool. I couldn't take the ball away from me, and I had a lot of fun. And I think my classmates liked that. They loved it, and they liked, for me to be on their team. And I think every year we had a 2-week PE lesson or activity or unit in soccer. And I was in heaven when that happened. So.
Just for that 2-week period, and then you get to high school, and then that's when you start playing on the team and in some other sports as well.
Yeah, four years later after my arrival, I heard that there was a soccer team at the high school level, and I just wanted to play. And we knew that tryouts. Found out that soccer was a winter sport. At the time I had played football. So I played three years of football already.
Some tackle football.
Yeah, tackle football, yeah. Wow. Tackle football since sixth grade. In fact, I was part of the first class that Doug Buchanan instituted tackle football in elementary schools there in 1969. And I loved it. I love contact. I love the strategy. I love what my coaches told me to do, which is go get the guy with the ball. We'll tackle him. And so I did. And I was the kicker, of course. They found out right away that I could hit a ball. And I used to kick it out of Temperance Cutner School into a dairy that was next to it. I never got a kickoff return. And so, so a lot of fun. But yeah, but soccer not until ninth grade.
And then, so did you have a pretty successful high school career at Clovis High? Were you guys in any championships? And I'm sure you were like team MVP and all that stuff too. But how did your high school career go for soccer?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, my coach, John Steinborn, was a wonderful man, a good tactician. He was a football guy, so he knew systems. And he was a textbook type of coach because he didn't play much that I know of, but he could put together talent. So he brought in good baseball players. He brought in some football players. He brought in, and then a handful of us that had some soccer experience, he put us together. To the credit of my coach, John Steinborn, Carl Dawazian came into the picture also. And I don't know if you're familiar with this name. You know, Carl had been the coach at Fresno Pacific University or college. He had been my coach's coach. And so he was involved in soccer. And somehow he came to Clovis High and saw that my coach had put me as a striker. And I wasn't getting the ball very much. And he,
you just have to wait for your opportunity.
Correct.
As that position.
Yeah. And he recommended that I be put in the midfield where I could play make and score goals and play make also and see the ball a lot more. And my coach John put me there, and we had a very good run my junior year where we upset the top teams, McLean, Roosevelt, teams that were perennially pretty good at that time. And they were they had the players, a generational player. They were the first junior soccer players from the Fresno area. I found out, you know, years later. And we made it to the Valley Championship in the inaugural year of La Monica Stadium.
Oh, wow.
And we played against a buzzsaw in Hoover High, who was a perennial champion. They were clinical. They were so good. I mean, they just, you know, we made it to the championship CIF final by just heart and a handful of us that could do some things and unbalanced defenses, score some goals, but Hoover High School was a machine. They beat us 5-0 or 5-1 in that championship match. But it was a time to celebrate in Clovis that soccer was there to stay. And we know what the district has done since then. So,
and I didn't know this until we talked before the show, Jaime, but I just assumed that you met your wife at Fresno Pacific College, a nice Mennonite girl, but that's not the case, right? You mentioned also that she was the best videographer you could ask for. You guys broke down tape, which is pretty cool. Probably put in the old VCR, right? So, I mean, talk about that story, how you met your wife and, you know, and then, you know, and then obviously with your three beautiful children. But how did you meet her? How did that all come about?
Well, it was my senior year at Clovis High, and at the time, you know, her mother had remarried, you know, rest in peace, my mother-in-law. She had remarried, and they moved to Clovis. My wife's father passed away, Orlando Wiebe, when they came here from Kansas. He was a theology professor, was a pastor at Bethany Mennonite Church. She was 11. He passed away from cancer. And so years later, her mother remarried. They bought a house in Clovis. She ended up at Clovis High on the first day of her junior year and the first day of my senior year. And I started in the cafeteria, and honestly, I said, this angel just dropped from the sky. I've never seen her, and she was stunning and drew my attention. We met a couple of weeks later after...
So you're too scared to go up to her that first time, right?
Well, luckily for me, that first day of class, I took typing. It was recommended to me that it would be good for college. So as we're passing out the syllabus, I turn around and pass the syllabus back, and there she is sitting behind me. So I saw her, and I just said hi. And then we took a test, typing test. Those of us that couldn't type had to go to another room next door. However, there was a window there. And for 2 weeks, I stared at her made her a little nervous, a little creepy. I think creeped her out. But 2 weeks later, I was walking to football practice, and she was sitting behind the library on a bench by herself. Nobody on the quad. Nobody in the area. So I got the courage to turn around and go introduce myself. Because for 2 weeks, I did stare at her in the cafeteria. And then and she her friends, however, she had some friends that knew of me.
Yeah.
And I assured her that I was an okay guy.
Yeah, okay guy. And so, a pretty good soccer player.
Yeah. She did come to soccer games and football games. She came to us as well. And it was a good start. And it was God's timing when he brought us together.
And then you go to Fresno Pacific College back then, mm-hmm. right? Now it's obviously a university. What are some, obviously, you know, I mentioned earlier that you were the record holder for goals and assists and total points up until 1999. So what was soccer like back then? What are some really cool memories you have of playing?
Boy, so many. But, you know, the cool moments. I mean, it was very physical. Running was daily. Running, like I said, my coach Ben Norton, his ears should be ringing right now as I speak about him, but he knew what he was doing. You offset the lack of talent with physicality, and in soccer, physicality comes out of conditioning, and so we ran and we ran and we ran, and so we had a handful of guys that could play, and then we had someone like me. They could score goals. And so he tried me on the midfield. He tried me on front. He did a bunch of different things. And so our sophomore year, our freshman year was tough. But, you know, we didn't win games until the very end. And I scored all the goals for the team at the end. And then our sophomore year, our coach recruited a good group of kids. We're still a small roster. But he brought in a young man from Roosevelt High School, Augie Colmenero. And then he dropped me from the striker position to the midfield. And Augie and I both each scored 20 goals that season. Me from the midfield, him from the striker, which I think at that time might have been unprecedented in the country. Wow. At any level.
A midfielder,
20 goals.
12 total striker games, goals. Maybe 13?
No, actually, we were playing 18 games.
18, okay.
18 games. No, it was still 18. And we beat Fresno State.
Ooh.
1-0. And Augie gave me the assist, and I scored the goal. So that was a highlight, you know, for us to beat them. And then we beat Seattle Pacific, who that year went on to win the NCAA Division II national title. And then a few other teams. And, you know, we missed the playoffs a year. We had a small roster, the NAIA playoffs. But then certainly the highlight was our senior year when we ended up beating Westmont, who at the time was arguably the best small college program in the West Coast. And we beat them for the regional championship, and I scored a 40-yarder against them, which is a...
Where'd you put it?
Over the goalie, right. Because he was cheating.
All right.
I saw him cheating. He was on the penalty spot, and then I had seen him, and I just waiting for my opportunity, and then I got him. Yeah, I beat him over the top.
You've been probably watching him all game, right? You saw him creep up every once in a while?
Like, very confident. Right, very confident goalkeeper, yeah.
That's so, a good way to phrase it.
Made him pay.
You didn't say cocky. You said overconfident.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so those are, you know, those were certainly some the way things were and the way things started, you know, back then. And then my sophomore year, in fact, I had a professional contract offer by a franchise in Las Vegas from the American Soccer League. And back in those days, there was two professional leagues, the American Soccer League and the North American Soccer League. And after the tournament, when we beat Seattle Pacific, my coach brings me to his office and says, "Hey, this professional team from Las Vegas wants to fly you out so you can talk to you about signing a contract with them. What do you think?" I said, "What do you think?" So they flew me out there. It's probably legal.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously the NCAA, the NAIA, the rules and regulations of professional to amateur was a little bit different. I don't know. I still to this day don't know, but I got on a plane and went to Las Vegas in the middle of the season. And I was offered a contract and I couldn't sign it there. I told them I needed to bring it home and pray about it and talk to people that I felt confident with. And everyone basically told me, do what you want to do. And I know I promised my mother that I would get my degree. And then if I had an opportunity to play professional soccer my sophomore year, I sure would have an opportunity to play after that. And so I said no, and I have a contract framed in my office. as a reminder of a decision that I made to honor a promise. And then the opportunity did come my senior year to play for the Los Angeles Aztecs of the North American Soccer League. And I went, played for the reserves for a year, and unfortunately, a lot of North American Soccer League franchises were folding due to the finances, and I came home after a year because they folded.
And there's so much more to your story, Jaime. We got to wrap things up. And I know you taught elementary, got into coaching 34 years later, Fresno Pacific, coaching for 34 years, I should say. And you have a wonderful story. You are a legend in the community. So thank you for coming on and sharing your story and all the great things happening at Fresno Pacific University. Thank you, Jaime.
Paul, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. That is a wrap. Thank you guys for listening. We'll do it again next week. This has been the Sunbird Sports Show on 790 ESPN.